Melissa Lockard with Steve Berman from the Steamheads, a show about the Oakland A's. Well, the A's split the first two in Texas, and Sean Manaea once again made it through five innings for his third straight start, this time going exactly five innings in the A's 10-3 win on Tuesday. And it's sort of interesting because it's like every start you kind of hope to see something different, and yet the storyline is almost always the same with Manaea so far this year. He looks pretty good for the first three innings, almost dominant in some respects, and then gets to that fourth inning and that fifth inning, and there's some trouble that comes along. And it isn't always necessarily his fault. I think yesterday, in a lot of other circumstances, he would have been through that fifth inning with no problem at all, and then maybe even gotten a chance to pitch six. But the error happened, and then it sort of snowballed, and he couldn't get that third out before the two runs scored. Still did get out of the inning with the lead and got the win. But Steve, at this point, you know, what do you think they can expect from Manaea? Is this going to be it, or do you think there's any kind of growth for him?
It's a good question. Look at his velocity. It hasn't really improved that much. One thing that was very interesting that I think a lot of people noticed was the pitch that he hit Chirinos on was 94 miles an hour. And for him, that's one of the fastest fastballs, if not the fastest, he's thrown all year. And a lot of people wondered whether that was intentional, since the A's have been getting hit an incredible amount by pitches. Chapman got hit in the helmet, and it seemed like that pitch might have been intentional. So when it was thrown, I was thinking to myself, okay, if it was from the dugout, I'm not really sure what you're thinking, because Manaea is somebody who's had a really tough time getting out of the fifth inning. So why are you adding a base runner in the fifth inning? They're only up four. It's not like it was a laugher of a game. And then he ended up giving up two runs in that inning. Or if it was just him unilaterally saying, I'm going to stick up for my guys and plunk Chirinos here, then still not probably the smartest decision by Manaea, but I get it. He's obviously a very loyal and spirited teammate. In terms of his pitching, the thing about Manaea is in this era, he stands out as not really a strikeout thrower at this point. You know, last year, he was striking out 9.1 per nine innings, which was higher than any mark he'd ever had in his career. Now he's back to 7.4, which isn't horrendous, but in 2020, that's actually kind of in the lower end for even a starting pitcher, and he's giving up a ton of hits. So I think there was kind of sort of a lot of like his starts. It seems like there's some times where you're like, oh, he looks really good. There's some stuff to build on. And then you kind of see the same parts where it looks like he has trouble putting guys away and he gives it too many hits.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting with that hit by pitch, because you almost sort of wonder if perhaps he's been holding back a little bit with his fastball, maybe a little bit afraid to let it go. And when he wasn't so concerned about where the pitch was going, because, you know, maybe he was feeling like he was going to come in, and if it hit him, it hit him, and he didn't really care. He was able to let go, and all of a sudden the velocity was there. And I do wonder if maybe that'll be a bit of a learning thing for Manaea, even about his own shoulder, like that if he is able to let go and throw a pitch 94 miles an hour, yeah, obviously it didn't, or maybe it did hit its target, it's hard to say, but, you know, it obviously wasn't a strike, but if he's able to throw 94, you know, I remember a pitching coach telling me once a long time ago, if it's in there, if you see it once, it means it's in there, you know, longer term. It's not like people can randomly throw 98 and then they, you know, can never throw 98 again. Like, so 94 is in there. And I do wonder if there's something that has to happen for him mentally to be able to feel comfortable letting it go. And, you know, maybe that pitch ends up being something that he can build off of in a very strange way. But, you know, it's interesting. If you look at his Statcast numbers, I mean, you know, the velocity is definitely a tick down. His hard hit rate is up a little bit, but his barrel rate is down. So he's giving up more hard hit contact, but he's not giving up barreled contact, which is sort of an interesting, it's like splitting your hairs, but it's like they're hitting it hard, but they're not necessarily hitting it right where they want to hit it. So, you know, he's been able to get away with it for a lot of instances until somehow it'll all snowball on him on this one inning. And I don't know if there's any way, you know, that he can really correct that. The four-seam fastball has been very ineffective for him so far this year. He's giving up a 3.43 batting average on that pitch. And I think, you know, it's obviously an important pitch. It's a pitch he builds everything else off of. But you look at his changeup, he's, you know, hitters are only hitting 194 against it. And so, you know, maybe there is something that he can look to do with that fastball, that instead of it being, you know, the pitch that is relied on as much, that he can somehow work in the changeup a little bit more and a slider a little bit more, you know, to kind of offset the effectiveness of the four-seam fastball, or the lack of effectiveness, I guess. It's weird because it really, you know, it's not spinning as much. The velocity drop isn't huge. And so it is a little bit confusing to see the difference in how hitters are reacting to it this year as opposed to when he came back in that brief stint at last September.
You could look at it and say, hey, his BABIP, his batting average and balls in play this year, is 358, which is really high. I mean, last year, you could look at it too and say it was 194. And so maybe when it looked like he was the team's ace in September, and that's why he got that wild card game, maybe he was a little bit on the luckier end. It's hard to say with that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, if you're not getting that many barrels, then you can kind of say maybe this is going to bounce out a little bit. But then on the other hand, he hasn't been able to put away guys. I do think when you mentioned the changeup portion of it, I think they're starting to see that. He threw 35% of his pitches yesterday were changeups, and that's the highest of any total this year. So the least amount of sliders. He was really just four seam and changeup yesterday, pretty much. No curves, very few sliders. So maybe they look at the scouting report and decide, you know, hey, if he's going to be a fastball changeup guy, maybe that's the way that you go here. And it seemed like he was actually working out pretty well there. And again, I'm just flummoxed by why you'd have Manaea, you know, intentionally throw at somebody. I'm guessing he did it by himself, because it seems like if you're going to do that, then do that with the reliever who you could switch out and you're not really worried about it. So I don't know. Of course, the relieving core was fantastic once again. I mean, you look at, I mean, Trevino's a guy who I'm actually pleasantly surprised by, because last year he was so shaky, and this year it seems like he just gets better and better and better progressively. So now his ERA is like around 3. He pitched 2 innings yesterday. TJ McFarland's, you know, has an ERA under 1. You look at that and you say, okay, well, they can probably weather this storm with Manaea, but you would definitely like him to start throwing some 6-7 inning starts here at some point. And I don't know if that's really in the cards this year.
Yeah, I'm not sure it is. And, you know, obviously that he's had low pitch counts through 5 innings, so they could push him to a 6th inning pretty easily in most of his starts at this point. And they've chosen not to, which I think tells you, you know, a decent amount of what they're seeing at that point. They're not seeing a guy they think is going to take him through the 6th and 7th inning. It's not a matter of making sure he's well rested. So that probably tells a lot. To your point about Trevino, I think, you know, his transformation into looking a lot more like his 2018 version of himself is actually, you know, a really huge development. It is a way, in some respects, that if they haven't figured out this whole starting rotation situation by the time they get to a postseason, could be really key. Because you look at, if you have a 3-game series, and, you know, Montas and Lizardo would obviously start 2 of them, and then that third one, you know, you could go with Chris Bassitt. I think Fiers and Manaea, I'm not so sure that their stuff plays that well for a postseason start, but you could also go with an opener. And I know people shudder at the idea of openers now, but, you know, someone like Trevino to start off a game for 2 or 3 innings, if he's pitching like he did in 2018, is a pretty intriguing possibility. And he was a starter early in his career, so obviously he's had that experience before, but I think he fell in love with his cutter a little bit. And, you know, it's easy to do that. He was throwing at 92 miles per hour, and a 92 mile per hour cutter is pretty ridiculous. That's like Mariano Rivera level, right? So you get why he fell in love with it. But I've read a lot about how, like, cutters can change the release points on four-seam fastballs. Guys kind of lose where that is. And I think maybe that's what happened to him last year, because he got beat a lot with his four-seam fastball in, you know, counts where he was ahead in the count, you know, 1-2, 0-2, whatever it was. And all of a sudden, a four-seam fastball that you would have thought would put a hitter away in previous years gets killed. And I wonder if he had sort of lost that release point a little bit, and backing off on the cutter is allowing him to be more accurate with that four-seam fastball. And when you throw 98, you know, you should probably use it, I would think. We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Maybe you're looking at, too, also the fact that the entire staff pitched fairly well yesterday. Jonah Heim, he comes in and, you know, his first game is a win. It seemed like a really easy win, but it was actually pretty tight throughout the first 5 innings or so, and until the ace kind of broke through there. It's not easy to handle a pitching staff. We saw that with Joey Bart on Monday night. It's, you know, even the guys who are the most talented will have tough times at certain points. And he threw out a base stealer. He actually looked at Baseball Reference, and he already has 0.2 war just based off of one game. So pretty much Baseball Reference gave him credit for 20% of yesterday's win, which is interesting. But I think it's something where the A's looked at you know, okay, Austin Allen's a guy we thought had some power potential, but maybe it's better for this staff to make sure that we have the best defensive backstop behind their behind the plate every single night.
Absolutely. And I think it was pretty clear that while Austin Allen's defense maybe wasn't necessarily something that the casual observer could look at and be like, wow, it's really costing us, you know, games. I think it was, because if you look at Sports Info Solutions puts out these total run save leaders every day. And you look at Sean Murphy, and Sean Murphy is at the top of that list for catchers. I mean, he's having what, not surprisingly, a spectacular season. And he, you know, is worth four by himself. And then you look at the A's as a catcher position and it was worth three. So that even though they didn't have a list of every single player, you can tell you where Austin Allen was sort of lining up in terms of his defensive value or lack thereof so far this year. And, you know, in fairness to Austin, that was the scouting report coming into this season, that he had more work to do defensively. I think if there was a AAA season, he could be getting seasoning and it would certainly be helpful for him. I don't think he was a disaster by that, you know, back there by any stretch. I mean, you can go back to the A's teams like in 2014 and the struggles they had with the catchers receiving and throwing. He was nowhere along those lines, but, you know, I think he was below average. And Jonah Heim has been consistently one of the top minor league defensive catchers the last couple of years. Very strong throwing arm. He's really improved his receiving over the last few years. Like Murphy, he moves well from side to side, which, you know, for tall catchers is pretty unusual. And the offense was sort of the thing that was kind of lagging until the last year or so. He's gotten a lot better. You know, having him and Murphy as your catching tandem, you're not necessarily having that huge drop off defensively from, you know, a guy who could win a Gold Glove pretty soon here in Murphy to the backup, which I think is a pretty neat thing for the A's to be looking at. And I wouldn't be surprised if Heim gets a pretty long run here now as the backup catcher.
Yeah, I think they had to like what they saw yesterday. And with Murphy, I think, though, it also is a sign that they probably want him to play more and more, generally, just at least traditionally. And not a lot of decisions these days are made based on traditions. But if you have a guy who's catching the majority, then usually the backup catcher is a guy that you are more worried about defense than offense. And I think Austin Allen, if they caught lightning in a bottle and he started hitting homers, then that kind of would have changed the calculus here. But with Murphy catching so well, and I think at the plate as a hitter, it seems like he's showing signs that what we saw last year with a lot of that pretty strong power, what is kind of flashing a little bit more as time goes on. I don't know if it's showing up in the numbers as much, but just in terms of his at-bats, seems like he's kind of getting it at the plate a little bit. I mean, he had, I remember a double last year when he was first called up, where I was just like, wow, this guy is incredibly strong. And I think, and I was looking at it like, oh, this guy might be a guy who hits, you know, 25 homers a year or something like that at some point. I think that, you know, the rest of the league's going to kind of catch up to him a bit. But still, he's not going to hurt you at the plate offensively so much. And his defense is so good that I think he's going to start the vast majority of the games. But Heim, yeah, he could get a long look. And who knows, maybe it'll be a situation where he plays, you know, 33-44% of the time. If he plays like he did yesterday, then that's definitely going to be the case. And I think the A's want to make sure that they have the absolute strongest defense possible. And I think they want to make sure that they get this staff through games in a way that kind of protects that bullpen, so that when they do get to the postseason, they're not worn out from having to pitch so many innings just over the next few weeks here.
Yeah, and I think one other thing to note about Murphy in particular, and certainly Heim historically in the minor leagues, is that they both are guys that give really good at-bats. You know, they're even when they're struggling, they see a lot of pitches. Heim has a really high contact rate traditionally as well. And, you know, again, there's been a lot of this sort of repetitive thing, but making contact in key situations and also building up pitch counts on starters early isn't something they'd necessarily have done as well as you would have hoped they would so far this year. So, you know, having two guys in the lineup, whether one or the other, who can provide that for you in every game, you know, I think is important. And Allen's power from the left side is definitely legit. I mean, that home run that he hit off of Gabalt back in when Texas came to Oakland a few weeks ago, you see why teams love that power. And I think he certainly has a major league future in front of him, but he's a more aggressive hitter and is more prone to striking out. And I think when you have guys like Murphy and Heim at the bottom of your lineup that do see a lot of pitches and in Heim's case, make a lot of contact, it just helps balance out the fact that they're having so much of this kind of swing and miss issues up at the top. So my guess is that's kind of what they were looking for a little bit as well in bringing Heim up at this point.
Yeah, I think you look at Austin Allen and one walk in 32 plate appearances, and 44% of his plate appearances ended in strikeouts. He had 14 strikeouts out of 31 plate appearances. I think, yeah, unless you're just clubbing the ball over the fence with regularity, then that's just not going to play at this point if your defense isn't a plus. And yeah, I don't think his defense, like as you mentioned, was like crazy bad by any means. It just was not exactly what Murphy's going to bring, and I don't think it's going to be quite what Heim is, because Heim has had such a good defensive reputation throughout his career in the minors. And so yeah, when you're not getting on base and you're not really making the pitcher work, and you're maybe overly aggressive and pressing to get, you know, those power numbers up like you had him in the minor leagues, as Allen might have been, I don't know. Jonah Heim had one walk yesterday, you know, and Sean Murphy's been walking actually quite a bit. You know, it's I don't think you look at his minor league stats and you think, oh, he's a guy who's going to be eating up base quite as much. But, you know, he's walking 16% of the time this year, which is more than he's done at pretty much any level of professional ball where he's been for a significant amount of time. So I think they're just really happy with Murphy, and they see him as the catcher of the future, and I don't blame him at all.
Yeah, and one fun note about Heim is that his inclusion on the roster means that Brandon Moss still lives, because Moss was traded for Wendell, who was traded for Jonah Heim. So we've still got that trade thread growing, which is a pretty fun connection back to the 2012 to 2014 era. So it's always just fun to see Major League debuts. I think the smile on faces for the guys that are, you know, in there doing it for the first time, there's no sport where you see that first mean so much as it does in baseball. And I thought that just, it was a shame his family couldn't be there in person, but just to see the joy on his face tells you everything, you know, that those 7 years it took him to get to that point really meant to him. And I thought that was really awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah. I saw some of the quotes that Alex had from Jonah's dad, and you know, that he was pretty much like saying, he was like, I feel like a fanboy myself. He gets to sit in the same dugout with Chapman and one of the best managers in baseball, and Bob Melvin. And, you know, I think it's one of those deals where, yeah, in a perfect world, the fans are all in the crowd and they're able to actually be there in person. But, you know, it's at this point, it's like, you know, everyone's going through the same crazy times that we all are. Everyone listening is thinking the same thing. You know, this is a nice little respite and some good news during a pretty weird time. And so I'm sure that, yeah, it's not perfect, but we're making do. And that's kind of the way it is with everything. And I'm sure his parents and everyone, that all of his loved ones, and Jonah himself is like, you know, yeah, you know, I didn't have a full house and everyone there, you know, and able to see them right after the game. But heck, it's my major league debut. We won. I got a hit. I got a walk. I threw a guy out. You know, can't really ask for much more than that.
Absolutely. And as we think about crazy times, I definitely want to have my thoughts are with everybody in the Texas and Louisiana area as the, you know, the hurricanes are coming in, and it'll be interesting to see if that ends up impacting the A's trip into Houston this weekend. But I really just hope everybody stays safe there. And we'll be back Monday to kind of talk about that series. It'll be, I don't know if they'll end up being able to play it or not, but if they do, hopefully that's a good sign that things were not as serious as they're looking right now. So thoughts with everybody there for sure.
Totally agree. That's one thing I've been actually looking right before we went on, just to see what the map is. And it looks like it's a storm that's already at 145 miles an hour. It's going to, you know, hit the Gulf Coast really, really hard. And the A's are heading over to Houston. It's one of those situations where it's like, what's next? And I just really hope that it's not as bad as it seems like it might be, and that everyone evacuates out safely, and that this thing doesn't become just something worse than any of the other bad hurricanes that we've seen over the last several years. It just seems like we're getting a lot of natural disaster talk lately, and even around here. And but yeah, hopefully that everything is minimal and flooding is minimal and everyone's safe out there for sure.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Stay safe, and we'll see you back here on Monday.